Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, this is Craig Garber. You know me as host of the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, but when I'm not interviewing world-class guitar players, I'm busy helping clients with their marketing. In fact, since March of 2000, I've helped over 300 clients in 108 different industries all over the world sell everything from $20 books to $5,000 seminar seats and everything in between. I even authored a book about my experience called How to Make Maximum Money with Minimum Customers. Now, if you own or operate a business, ask yourself the following marketing-related questions and be honest with your answers. Are you generating fresh new qualified leads on a daily basis? Is your website generating enough sales? And if not, do you know why? Is your advertising effective? Is it predictably and reliably making you several multiples of what you're spending on it? And lastly, are you consistently communicating with your email list? Or do you have an email list of prospects and customers, but you have no idea what to say to them, how often to say it, or how to make money with this list? If you need solutions for these marketing problems, then you need to book a one-on-one marketing strategy session with me. After this strategy session, you'll know how to speak to and make money with your email list, how to use your website to attract customers and clients who are ready to buy from you now, and how to sell your goods and services for top dollar and at much higher profit margins than your competition. Listen, stop hoping things will get better on their own. Hope is not a very good business strategy. Instead, book a marketing strategy session with me by going to everyonelovesguitar.com/marketing and find out if your business meets the five criteria you need to qualify for this service. Again, that's everyonelovesguitar.com/marketing. Thanks for listening. Now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, this is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar. And right now, while this is fresh on your mind and before anything else comes up, head on over to everyonelovesguitar.com and sign up to get behind-the-scenes information about upcoming guests and early access to a number of great programs we're going to be rolling out really soon. That being said, we have a super cool guitar player with us today. This guy's an excellent player. A number of his peers have told me what a badass he is. And I like him because he's a rock and roll guy. We're with Phil Schaus. He's been working as professional guitarist in Nashville since 2003. And here's just a few of his career highlights. He's on tour currently with the Gene Simmons Band. He played in with Ace Frehley when Ace sat in with Gene Simmons Band. He's played with Don Felder. And he's also backed artists such as Rodney Atkins, John Corabi, David Lee Murphy, Derek St. Holmes. And he's a founding member of The Rock and Roll Residency. We'll talk about that in a bit. And he's also the founder and owner of Mutt Merch, which is a really cool e-commerce company, what we'll talk about. So, man, thank you for coming on the show. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me, Craig.
Yeah, you got it. Hey, real quick, before we get started, just curious what the last piece of music you listened to.
Oh man, that'd have to be Kiss. I'm right in the middle of our Christmas show.
Your Christmas show.
Christmas rehearsals. It's Thursday, so we're having rehearsals all week. So yeah, it'd have to be something by Kiss.
Where's the show? Is it going to be in Nashville?
It's in Nashville at the Exit Inn this Thursday.
Oh, that's so cool.
We've been doing it since 2011, and this year, since things are different for us this year, we asked Gene, and he gave us permission. Said to have a great show, and he's happy we're doing it. We always do it for charity. It's part of the cover charge is a can of food or a new toy in the box.
Very cool, man.
So, yeah, for the past, since 2011, we've taken like carloads of stuff over to this really good mission on downtown Nashville. And so, yeah, it's a really, really great time.
That's nice, man. That's really good. And I have to tell everybody, Phil is like, you know, if you look up rock and roll star, he looks like a rock and roll star, man. So there
well,
you
maybe
go.
Not right now. But
what's that? No, he does. He's
maybe not at 10 in the morning.
No, but I mean, like, he just got the whole, like, you're what I wanted to look like when I was a little kid. I wanted to be, like, in better shape. I wanted to have really long hair and play guitar. And I did none of those things. But now I just live vicariously through my guests.
Oh, that's hilarious.
For both of the, I want to talk about Gene Simmons and Don Felder. If you could talk about, because they're both iconic artists, you know, how you got the gig, maybe a cool or funny story or discussion about something, some aspect of your experience in playing with them, and anything you might have learned from the experience, either about playing, about business, about entertaining, or about life in general, if there is any of those lessons.
Sure, all those. So I got the Gene gig from Ryan Cook, who was one of the three guitar players that we have in the Gene band. We call ourselves the Guitar Me. Ryan has known Gene, I think, since the late 90s. And he also does a lot of work with McGee Management, Doc McGee. That was just Kiss's management. So he's kind of inside. And we all know those guys a little bit, but Ryan knows them better. So Ryan's also in a band called The Big Rock Show. And that show also features Jeremy Asbrock, who is the final piece of the guitar me in the Gene Simmons band. And they've played on every single Kiss cruise. The cruise in 2016, Gene asked Ryan to put together a band for him for a handful of solo shows that he had in 17. And it did. It started out as like five, and it turned into probably maybe 25.
Oh, wow.
But so he asked Ryan, knew players that did that kind of thing and that looked rock and roll. Gene wanted a rock band. And so Ryan said, yeah, I know the guys I'm going to get right now. And that was it.
That was it.
So, yeah. And then the show with Felder and Ace and Cheap Trick was on that bill too. You can't really get better.
Wow. Yeah.
That was the most amazing day of my life. It really was. And not only that, it was a charity show. And there was two shows. That was the big show where everybody played. And there was a smaller gala the next night where Gene kind of emceed. And we backed up Felder and then Ace jammed that night too. Raised $1.9 million.
Where was this?
In St. Paul, Minnesota.
Holy crap.
So those two events were almost $2 million. And the charity is a great charity called the Children Matter. And this year it was to help hurricane victims. So not only personally, I had the greatest day of my life, but it also like did a hell of a lot of good.
That's
so
amazing.
That was a fantastic day.
So it had to be broadcast online, I'm assuming, to raise that much money?
The first show was in a big baseball stadium. At the St. Paul Saints Stadium. And the next night was this smaller gala, really high dollar gala.
Okay, it was
to
like
even
a private.
Get in.
Okay.
It was one of those kind of things. And Gene was auctioning off some things. And Don Felder was auctioning off some in-house concerts, like solo shows.
Sure.
So a lot of things like that were getting auctioned off at pretty high prices. But yeah, it was a great, really amazing people. We were treated the best. And just had a great time and got to play with Ace.
Did you guys have to, like in a private event like that where it's high ticket, do you have to mingle? Is that part of what normally happens or?
Yeah, but we're great at that. We love that.
Well, didn't know like what the expectations were. I mean, because I know that you know, if you're going to pay a high ticket, I would have thought most people think, you know, you're going to hang out with the band, hang out.
Yeah. We were just kind of we're nobody knows who we are really. But we all got there and got kind of settled in and got our show clothes on. We're like, all right, drink. Let's go to the bar. So we hit the bar and walked around and took pictures with everybody because a lot of the folks had been to the show the night before. So they did recognize us and they just had nothing good things to say. And likewise, everybody there was just fantastic. Had a great day that day.
Did Gene know Felder from back in the day? Because they both came up in the same time musically.
I don't know if they really got on back then.
Because that's that's like a weird combination sort of.
At that time, I'm sure the Eagles probably turned their noses up at Kiss.
Yes.
Back in the day. But also, you know, that was the band that Gene was probably referring to when it was, you know, four bums that need a shave walk on stage. but they work, they've worked together with this same charity, I think for a while. They've both done a lot of events together. And Don was coming into play and didn't know if he's going to bring his band or just do solo. And Gene goes, why don't you use my guys?
Right.
So that's how that happened. And it was killer.
That's
awesome.
We did
Hotel California and Take It Easy. It was fantastic. I really wanted to do Victim of Love because that's one of his too.
That's a great song.
That one and Heavy Metal. I was like, oh man, come on, let's play those.
That opening in Victim of Love, what a great, powerful, simple, but so powerful solo, you know?
I love that tune. And we play it at the residency. That's one of the ones that we do, like, one of our standards. So, yeah, we were ready to go for that one.
Was it weird? What was going through your head when you're on stage doing Hotel California with Don Felder?
Well, I was playing bass.
Oh, that's funny. Wow.
I got the bass gig for that. I kind of volunteered. I was like, well, I'll do it. So, no, it was fun. He had, you know, the white double neck. And I learned that he has a Leslie built into the guitar. So that way, because on the 12-string side, there's a Leslie on the track.
Interesting.
And so that way, he doesn't have to bring a pedal or anything, because he's always going to play that song.
Yeah.
Right? Wherever he goes, Correct, he's going to play that song.
Yeah,
so he just had it installed on the guitar. And there's two jacks coming, two output jacks coming out of the guitar. So it goes into two, he had Fenders.
Yeah.
It goes into two separate amps. So the six string has got one amp and the 12 string has got one amp.
Interesting. I guess when you're Don Felder, it's nothing to say, hey, just modify this guitar and stick a Leslie. You know, in fact, give me three so I could put him in cartage all over or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. When you write that song, you can pretty much do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, I hear you.
But
man.
No, he was really cool. It was no rehearsal for any of this. We kind of, with Don, it was running it through a sound check.
Wow.
And, you know, we all did our own. We're used to that, though. It's just no big deal. We just had our parts ready and ready to go and did the vocals kind of on the fly. And yeah, it was great.
That's really cool, man. It's good. Good. What have you've been with Gene a long time. What have you, I mean, he's a really astute.
This year was the first year, 2017.
Oh, 2017. Okay.
Yeah. This is his first solo tour ever.
He's such an astute business guy. I was curious if you've picked up on anything just
by
hearing him talk or on the phone or, you know, the kind of guy like that. You just, you know,
just listening to him talk and being around him is a lesson. Is lesson after lesson. It really is, because he talks a lot and he'll answer any question that you have. We talk about trademark law a lot and just being around him and just hearing his outlook on life, and it's just enough to be an inspiration. And it's just really good just nuggets of advice that just get dropped all over the place.
Well, his knowledge, he must have a completely in-depth knowledge of trademark law, because he's managed and been able to exploit that for probably better than any other person ever in the history of rock and roll.
Yeah, he's probably more astute than a lot of lawyers are.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, on that subject, and a lot of subjects. The guy knows about a lot.
That's cool, man. Well, good. Talk about the rock and roll, or the rock and roll residency.
Well, the rock and roll residency started out as a 1 month residency in April 2014. Jeremy Asbrock, who I mentioned before from the Gene Band, also, and I had a slow month that month. And wanted to try to do a 1 month thing. We knew so many tunes because we'd done so many tribute shows, like to rock acts, Thin Lizzy and Aerosmith and Kiss Thing and Iron Maiden and blah, blah, blah. And we knew a lot of friends. We have a lot of friends in Nashville that are kind of, you know, have some sort of name attached to them. So, well, it'd be pretty cool to do like not an all-star jam, but, you know, plan it out and invite people out every week and do some songs. So the first month went great, and so we continued it throughout the summer. Well, the summer went great, and the bass player and drummer that we had, the drummer was David Parks in the beginning, and the bass player was Chuck Garrick from Alice Cooper's band. But Chuck, they both had to split for touring obligations, right? So Chuck had to leave with the Alice and Motley Crue tour. So that thing went on for 2 years, solid. So the end of the summer came, and the show was still going great. We was like, well, let's just keep on playing. Well, then Chuck started making the residency that night, the after party for the Motley and Alice show.
Oh,
that's not Alice Cooper came. And the whole Alice Cooper band came. And that's what really put us on the map was that show. And then we started getting, we've had Robin Zander and Dax from Cheap Trick.
Very cool.
We've had Roger Glover and Don Airey from Deep Purple.
Wow. Play.
We've had Derek St. Holmes is almost a regular. We've had Peter Baltus from Accept and Wolf Hoffman. All of Accept played one night. They did Fast as a Shark and did a couple tunes.
Restless and Wild. I remember that.
Yeah, they did that one. Christopher Williams, their new drummer, is one of my dearest friends. He lives in Nashville. And
that's so cool.
So he's tight with Rachel Bolan from Skid Row, comes out a lot. We've had Kip Winger, Mark Slaughter is a good friend. I know I'm forgetting some people that come all the time, and I'm going to feel horrible, but it's been so many people. And Lizzie Hale and Joe from Hailstorm, they come out when they're not playing. They just come out to hang. So it's like Nashville has a pretty kick-ass rock community now. And somehow we've become like the like the focal point of it, which I'm very, very thankful for.
Yeah, that's awesome, because it's, you know, from a networking standpoint, you know, being wired into all these people helps, you know, it keeps your name out there, and it gets, turns into gigs at some point, or if it, not for you, great. Then for somebody else, or you're turning somebody else onto a gig, it's a good thing.
It's happened a couple times. Christopher kind of got the Accept gig related to us, and also our friend Sarah Tomek, who plays drums for Steven Tyler, got the gig from the residency. We were doing some Aerosmith. We were doing Lord of the Thighs, actually.
What a great
song. And Marty Fredrickson was there, who's been Steven's main collaborator for years. And he saw her play and was like, ah, I got our drummer.
That's so cool. Lord of the Thighs. I haven't heard that song mentioned. That was from the black and white album cover. I can't think.
Get Your Wings.
Yeah. What a great song. Yeah.
So what we do is we do 70s rock covers. You're not going to come and hear Surrender or In Sweet Home Alabama. We do deep cuts.
Yeah.
We like really do album cuts.
That's awesome.
So yeah, we like to play. We do a couple big hits here and there, but most of the time it's pretty obscure.
That's the kind of music I like.
Yeah. But it's almost four years later, and it's going stronger than ever. So if anybody's in Nashville on a Tuesday, it's at Mercy Lounge in Nashville. We start about 8 o'clock. Yeah, we've love it there, and it's going strong.
Dude, next time I'm up there, I'm gonna come check you guys out. That's so cool.
Do it, man. Do it.
I love that music, which is so funny. What about Mutt Merch? That's an e-commerce company you have.
Yeah, so Mutt Merch started a few years ago, and it came from love of music and love of dogs. Because everybody, you know, obviously, if you're listening to this radio show, you like music, and if you don't love dogs, well, you're simply an asshole. So I figured out a good idea that somebody hadn't done before was to do music and dog puns. So what we do is we sell t-shirts for humans and dogs with designs such as Bones and Noses, Grateful Dane, Neuterhead, The Beagles, Def Shepherd, Black Labbeth. We also have Notorious P.I.T. And a few others. If you go to this website, Muttmerch, M-U-T-T, muttmerch.com, you'll see them all.
Awesome. So what prompted you to start an e-commerce company? That's not a usual... I've interviewed 175, maybe 200 guitarists, and I think you're the first guy that's got an e-com company.
Well, it's the music industry is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Right now. With me, nothing I've done in music now has created mailbox money. I'm not really a writer. I'm a guitar player. I'm a gunslinger. And so when you're in that position, no matter what gig you have, the gig is going to end.
100%.
The person that you play with is either going to retire or die. Or change their mind, or go in a different direction, or fire your ass.
Right.
One of the two. You know, something's going to happen. It's going to be over. And if you don't plan for that, and you know, you're kind of screwing yourself. And I've always thought it was really interesting when musicians had other businesses, like Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull has fisheries, and he's made a mint on it. And my boss, Gene, is kind of pretty much the king of that.
Oh, he's the king of that, man, yeah.
So I've always kind of thought that was interesting and a good idea to do, putting your money into something that can make you even more money. So this is kind of, my brain works this way with puns and cutesy little marketing ideas, I guess.
Yeah.
So it got this going, and a dear friend believed in the company and put some money behind it, and we're still pushing along. Four years later.
Are you on a Shopify cart?
No. We're on Etsy right now, and we're working on getting everything, but we're online, muttmerch.com, and we're also Muttmerch on Etsy too. So Facebook store and all that stuff is coming soon.
Awesome. Good. Well, I'm glad you did that, man. I think everybody should have something online, because you're right, especially in your business. It's like, literally here today, gone tomorrow.
And everybody, and it's not easy, but the tools are there for marketing.
Correct.
And if you just put, you know, the elbow grease to it, you can get something going.
Yeah, but nothing. What's easy? Was it easy becoming a musician and learning the art? I have guitars here, but I don't play as good as you. Why is that? You know, because I don't practice as much as you did. You know, hello. It's like a very simple formula. You know, I mean.
Yeah, totally. You have to put. You have to put the time and hours in no matter what you're doing.
Yeah, totally, man. Well, I hope that continues doing well for you. And I'm really glad you did that. Are you going to expand? Thank you. Are you going to expand that?
Well, yeah, I've got plenty more designs to make. I just teamed up with a great company in Huntsville, Alabama called Amplify, and they're a screen printing company, but they're pretty much taking over my operations. They're doing fulfillment and they're helping me with marketing. So they've been a godsend, and things have really been on the up and up since they came on board. Cool. So I have really, really good feelings about 18.
So they do print on demand, basically?
Yes. Awesome. Yes, that we are now, yes, which is going to save my ass.
Awesome. Yeah, well, you don't have to sit there shipping stuff, and that's...
Exactly.
It's not a business when you're doing all that stuff. Believe me, I've been in working for myself almost 20 years in various marketing capacities, and it's not... I've done everything, and when you don't have to do that stuff, it's more of a business.
And I'm gone so often that it's like I get an order in. I'm like, hey, I'm in Japan. Can I get this out in 2 weeks? Sorry.
Nobody wants to hear that, yeah.
You know, and I hate it. So this is, they're right. Amazing. Good, and things have really been up. So that's great.
Otherwise, you got to take a suitcase, load suitcases. And then you pull out three orders when you're gone in Japan for a week. And you're like, fuck. And you paid, $300 overage for the.
Yeah. Yeah. Checking five bags for just. Yeah. In case orders. So they're good. Great. So I need really, that's been a like I said, a godsend.
That's awesome, man. You working on anything else right now musically that you're excited about?
Yeah, I just started Skype lessons.
Awesome.
Online Skype lessons. So if any of the listeners are interested in that, email philshouseofmusic@gmail.com. philshouseofmusic@gmail.com. And I'll give you the details and we'll get you set up.
Now, is that for people or for people and their dogs?
People and their dogs, actually, the awesome. Same thing. Why discriminate? You know, why narrow your audience?
Phil's got a unique positioning in the marketplace, unlike any other teacher out there. Right. Where are you originally from, man? Where'd you grow up?
Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. I was born in Madison. Grew up in Sun Prairie. It's a suburb just outside of Madison, and lived there till I was five, and then moved to Norfolk, Nebraska.
Oh wow!
Until 1988, and then moved to Decatur, Alabama, and that's kind of where I was based out of until I moved to Nashville in 2004.
Oh, how come? What was the move to Nebraska? Your dad got transferred around a lot, or?
Yeah, my dad worked for Goodyear, okay. And so all the moves were work related for him. That's and cool. Us.
I interviewed a lady from something Prairie in Kansas, and you know that always
Grand Prairie. I'm trying to think what it is.
I don't know if something, but. Every time I see that name, it just sounds so like I'm from the Bronx. So like that sounds so wholesome and like diametrically opposite to anything I was exposed to. It's always sounds it like I just have these visions of fields and sunshine and like I don't even know what the hell it is, but that's it's the name Prairies. Like
yeah, the Bronx sound the Bronx word sounds like the word can beat you up.
It can. And it does.
It does. Yeah.
It's just there's nothing unbeating. Sun Prairie. Up. Yeah. It just sounds like wow. I'd like to be born there and
Great Prairie.
Have more than 3 feet of space outside of me, like, next to somebody. You come from big family, brothers and sisters, or
no, just one older brother. Cool. He's 13 years older than me, Kevin. So that's just us two.
Did you start playing guitar from him?
Indirectly, yes. He was a drummer. And so he played drums in a polka band. We were in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
so
I was going to say, that makes sense, yeah.
They worked all the time. The Polketeers were their name. And so him being the drummer, they practiced at our house.
Right.
There's a drum set downstairs. So for whatever reason, I was drawn to it and his record collection. So him being in high school in the late 70s meant he had a lot of kick-ass records.
Yeah.
So, you know, first alphabetically was Aerosmith.
Right.
And that was my favorite. At 3-4 years old,
sure.
Aerosmith, the first two the second Zeppelin album in particular was one I was drawn to. Hendrix, the first two Van Halen records, that all kind of started from his record collection and me getting on the drums and messing around and actually kind of playing at four.
Playing drums,
playing drums somewhat decent for a 4-year-old that couldn't reach the pedals. But no, everything started from that. like my love of rock and roll, and that was my first intro to music, period.
And then how did you pick up a guitar? How did that
happen? It came from a picture of Joe Perry. I would stare at the Aerosmith covers and gatefolds and the record sleeves, and that's there, all their pictures that have these collages with microscope size pictures, and this is on, you know, album size, and they were so small, there's so much information in there, and I was just mesmerized by how they looked. I didn't understand what it was, but they just looked like, I just wanted to look like that. And Aerosmith, the live bootleg and the gatefold, there's a shot of Joe Perry, and he's turned, or he's got his back to the camera, back to the crowd, and he's got a Strat on, like playing a Strat. He's got a Les Paul on his back, leather pants tucked into cowboy boots, and it was just a memorable, coolest image. Oh God, it was so cool, and that was it.
Yeah.
He was so cool, and I just wanted to play guitar.
Well, I'll tell you what, those first six Aerosmith albums, I burned the tracks in on the albums, and you know, with the needle and the grooves. I played those albums over and over. Just brilliant. There's nothing wrong with any of those records, you know.
Brilliant. No, they're perfect. Nothing wrong with the writing, the arranging, the playing, the tones. I mean, everything was so smart. And when you really get into Rocks in particular,
yeah,
we did a show where we played Toys and Rocks, both albums in their back to back in their entirety. Man, Rocks is fucked up. There's some guitar stuff that should not work on there.
Like combination?
They're playing the riff a half of a part.
Yeah, that thing
and
is.
There's other parts like Lickin' a Promise and a couple other songs that just the arrangements are just so bizarre. And the two guitar chords are just, they're playing different chords.
But Perry, in general, he's never like, he's not really a guy that fits in any classification. He's got his I have never heard anybody play like him. He's got his complete.
Nobody sounds like Joe fucking Perry.
Nobody is a unique style, because you might sit there and say, well, he's kind of blues influenced, but what he does is I've never heard anybody do it.
It's Jeff Beckish, in that he's just not playing lick after lick. You know, he's playing a line.
Yeah.
He's playing melodic lines, but they're just like the Mamakins, the intro solo in Mamakin is the one that stands out for me. It's like, that is the weirdest thing to come up with.
Cause it keeps going up chromatically, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, it's the one that the song opens and then the Perry solo kicks in. It's just so strange. It's so weird.
Yeah. I love those records, man. When I think about my music in my youth, that's what comes to mind. Those first six albums, I really love them. I'm sure everybody's getting sick of me talking about Aerosmith, so let me.
Never.
But too bad. They're fucking great albums. Here, in fact, I'm going to say the names of them, so in case you've been living under. Go get these records. Aerosmith from 1973. Get Your Wings, 74. Toys in the Attic, 75. Rock, 76. Draw the Line, 77. Night in the Ruts, 79.
Yeah. People forget about Night in the Ruts.
Oh, great album. Great album, man.
Yeah, it's great.
It's got Draw the Line. It's got Chiquita, Walking in the Sand. What a great song that is.
No Surprise.
Yeah.
No Surprise.
Reefer-Headed Woman. Great. That's just...
Yeah.
Mia, that ballad at the end.
Yep.
Anyway, what prompted you to move to Nashville, man?
You know, it was kind of my last-ditch effort to do something.
To make this work.
To make this work. I was living in Decatur, Alabama, which is just 2 hours south. And I tried this and tried that and moved here and moved there, and nothing was working. And I'd already kind of given up music two or three times before. And I was like, all right. I had a nowhere job in Decatur, super depressed, not doing anything musically that I really wanted to do. And a band I was in had started to go play in Nashville at the Exit Inn, actually. And so I knew a few people up there. And so I joined a couple groups in Nashville and was going, driving back and forth, commuting. And then I ended up meeting a girl there and end up marrying her and then divorcing her, but it's fine. So I started spending more time in Nashville than I did in Decatur. And I was
that
like,
was
well,
a
time
quick,
to move.
A quick in and out there.
You know,
it was a rock.
It wasn't that quick.
Okay. Cup of coffee.
But I was starting to move. I was spending way more time in Nashville than I was in Decatur and doing really nothing in Decatur and all that I wanted to do. So it was time to move. And that's when I just really, my eyes were opened and I learned everything. Not everything, but my point was that the way I put it, when I moved to Nashville before that, I didn't know shit about dick, about music, about music business. I had absolutely zero idea what it meant and how to have a career as a musician. Absolutely no fucking clue.
Example.
So I learned. Oh, I just one of my biggest eye openers was moving up here and realizing that there's this huge blue collar musician community, that not everybody that walks on stage is pulling up in a Mercedes Benz to rehearsal. It's like, oh yeah, these guys are clocking in. So to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, getting paid a wage, and they go home and off the bus and go to their families. And like I said, I didn't really even know that world existed until I was kind of in it. My ex-wife's mother and her mother sings in Lynyrd Skynyrd. She's one of the backup singers, and she has been for like 20 years. So she was pretty much the first person that I really knew closely that had a career in music, and that opened my eyes and showed me so many things, and so grateful for having that happen.
Wow, that's great. What else? What? Give me another example, if you can, of like from a business standpoint, what the education that you got here.
You know, the main thing was just that they're just working class guys, and it's. Everybody's at work, and you know, I mean, we have a great time. I mean, look what our job is. It's traveling around and playing music, so it's a great gig, but it's work.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't treat it like work and treat it like a job, and if you do treat it like a party, you're not going to last. So I really did get serious right before I got my first gig. I'd gotten sober, and I stayed sober for almost 4 years. I really needed to take a break and get some things in line, get my health in order, and get my brain in order. I'm not anymore. I do enjoy a good IPA every now and again now, but I really needed to, and that was a great thing for me to do, and it worked for me. So it helped clear out a lot of things.
What do you think prompted that? Because that's not like you know, you're not sitting in the shower one day and so I think I'll get sober. You know, that's a pretty fucking serious.
I was tired of waking up in the morning and forgetting what I had to apologize for. Not forgetting, but not remembering what I had to apologize for and who I had to apologize to. And it was happening a lot. Excuse me. And I just got sick of it. I got sick of feeling guilty. I got sick of being hungover. I got sick of just being that way. And I couldn't wait to get time under my belt. And I also knew, as I was getting more serious and more opportunities are coming my way, and I knew that if I really wanted to have a serious career and have a long-lasting career, that I was going to have to make some changes. And changes I was willing to make.
Man, that's pretty deep shit. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Did you go to work the rooms, or you just...
Nope, just did it.
Just did it.
Just did it. I wanted it so bad. And right after that, I kind of did get sober. I've been sober for, I don't know, maybe less than a year. I got with this group called Morningwood. It was a New York rock band.
Morningwood. What a great name for a band. Holy shit.
We kind of traveled the world. And so I was like getting sober in Europe.
Wow.
And I did it.
I also went
vegetarian at the same time.
That's great, man.
And so I was also in Europe not eating delicious sausages and having these amazing European German beers. So, yeah.
Yeah, but you're on your own trip there, man. That's
I really was, man. I was reading a lot of Eastern religions or books. I was reading a lot of Yogananda and things like that. And yeah, I was on my own thing completely. But it's the best decision I ever made.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely. Definitely the best thing I ever did.
Good for you, man. I'm happy for it. Congratulations. When you're I couldn't imagine like I don't know, the world is sort of overwhelming enough to me. I could not imagine, you know, I don't have a substance abuse. I'll have a drink on the weekend, but I couldn't imagine having to deal with life, you know, stoned, or I just couldn't handle it. I mean, and I know that, and I've talked to guys, I've had tons of friends have gotten sober over the years, and they say, hey, Greg, that's why people use, because they have the same sense of overwhelm that you do from time to time, but they, you know, it's harder to manage maybe for them or whatever. But I couldn't imagine. I mean, it's just like, there's so much shit that on your plate 24/7. I don't know how.
And that's a thing I'm looking at now with everything going on. With, I've got so much that I want to do. I don't really have the time to be wasted or to be hungover. Yeah, I've got so much to do, and I've got so much that I want to do in addition to what I'm doing already, that I don't really have the time to be wasted.
Yeah.
Or hungover, or I just don't really have the time to do that. It takes up a lot of time.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, between that and the recovery from that, the rebound, it's like, fuck, then there's your day. Then you got to start, over.
Then, oh, geez. And then when you get, you know, around our age, the recovery absolutely blows.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I just have a lot I want to get accomplished. And being wasted all the time isn't really one of them anymore.
Well, I'm good, man. I'm really happy you did that. And thank you for sharing that. That was really cool of you to share that, man.
Sure.
Look at your Eastern Indian something on your wall there, tapestry or something. Looks pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I moved up to my charger and put my phone in. So.
Yeah, that's cool. When you started playing professionally, right?
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the surprises that you were like, oh, I didn't know this, that you got schooled on pretty quickly? And I don't necessarily mean bad things, just like, oh, I didn't know this.
Yeah. Oh, man, pretty much everything. I really didn't know anything, but I learned, and I've always been this way, but I learned it was really important to just shut up and listen, you know, especially when it's guys that have been on a bus, you know, my first time on a bus, my first time doing this, that. Listen to these guys that have done it before, and don't be a know-it-all or a loudmouth, which I never really have actually been that way. I've always been kind of willing to learn and eager to learn and easily taught, easily learned, learned. But just shut up and listen to the people around you, you know, and ask questions if you have a question. And luckily, everybody that I've worked with has been very cool, you know, main artist wise and band wise. I've had great relationships and gotten, you know, gig after gig after gig from just knowing different people in those situations. So,
well, Nashville seems to be such an unusual town in that way that it's very supportive of. You know, just everybody says, just don't be a dick, and it's pretty much true.
Absolutely. And that's another thing I learned. Thanks for bringing that up. It's a good point that, of course, your playing abilities is important. You have to be able to play. But if you're just the most kick ass guitar player and you are a dick and hard to work with, you're not going to work.
As it should be.
You're
not
going to work.
Yeah.
If you can play the parts and you're an easy hang, you're going to get hired. You're going to get hired. And Nashville is great in that way. And I've been here 13 years, and I don't know if you've been to Nashville recently, but it's a whole hell of a lot different than it was even 7 years ago. It's growing. It's becoming more of a city. But that feel, I mean, as far as the circle that I'm in and the circles that I'm in, it's still as supportive as it ever was. And I just got reminded how some, like, small town scenes are just completely full of unprofessional assholes.
Hmm.
Got reminded of that last week, and I was like, wow.
Why you were out of town?
So,
what happened?
Well, yeah, it was just a small town. Some people really showed their asses. And I just realized, like, wow, what a cool scene that we have in Nashville, Music City, USA. and everybody helps each other out. Everybody's supportive. Everybody comes out to shows, and everybody is positive. Hmm. It's the most positive music community that I've ever been around.
For sure, man. Yeah, yeah. That's very cool. Yeah, I've seen that just me as an outsider, even. It's like everybody's been just that way, very supportive, very nice. And
it's cool. So cool, man. Yeah. It's really cool.
Let's talk gear for a few minutes. What's your go-to guitar right now? What other two guitars would be, you know, round out your top three?
My go-to guitar is one of the ones I just received. I work with this company called Vintage Guitars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
And they're not old. They're that's the name of the company. They're out of the UK. Trev Wilkinson is the main guy behind the company. Also Fret King. He's behind Fret King. And these guys have been absolutely amazingly supportive to me and the rest of the guys in the Gene Simmons band. I discovered them and fell in love with their guitars, and I like them because they make guitars that are based on iconic guitars
right.
made by other companies. And one of those companies that I was working with became a horrible company to work with. Hmm. So I found these guys. So the one I have that I love now is a V6. It's an SG shape guitar with a kind of a more asymmetrical look to it. And that thing, but the thing plays itself.
What kind of pickups?
It's fantastic.
They're your own pickups?
Yes, Trev Wilkinson wound pickups. And my favorite ones of his are his PAF right. copies. These aren't. They're a little hotter, but in every other humbucker vintage guitar I have the PAFs in it. So I thought it'd be a good change to have something a little bit different. And I used it on a session last night, and it's a great playing guitar.
That's awesome.
It really is.
There's a lot of guys there's actually several companies out of the UK that specialize in these PAFs. It's interesting.
Yeah, his PAFs are my favorite pickup.
I've heard several people I've interviewed mention him. I may have to get him on the show. Trevor Wilkinson, such an English name. My wife's from the UK, so that's like Trevor Wilkinson. It's such an
yeah. It's such a British. Almost like Nigel.
Yeah.
It's almost like Nigel Tufnell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally. Okay, so you got your vintage V6. What would be number two and three?
Probably my two V100s from Vintage. I've got a Tobacco Sunburst 2 pickup, and I've got a Gloss Black 3 pickup. And that's the one that I bring on the Gene Simmons gigs.
And I'm assuming it's shaped like a can I say what it's shaped like?
Sure.
Is that probably shaped like a Les Paul, I would imagine?
Yeah. 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 Okay. A little bit different.
Yeah.
But it has those kind of contours. And they play great. They look great, and they're super supportive. The three pickups are custom. I have the only three pickup that they make.
That's cool, man. Well, I had to be a Les Paul. We spent 20 minutes talking about Aerosmith. I'm like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, you got to be playing something like a Les Paul.
Oh yeah.
Do you have any other guitars or that have some interesting or cool stories behind how you got them?
Not really. I'm not really a pawn shop guitar guy. All my guitars are pretty much acquired by regular means, like either buying them or getting them through an artist endorsement.
Gotcha. You said by regular means. I was going to say, eBay. No.
Yeah. I have one. I have two guitars that were gifts from a dear, dear friend of mine. A Gibson Explorer 76 reissue that was the first Gibson that I had, and also a Flying V.
Yeah.
'67 reissue. So they're both like mid, late 90s. So they're really good.
That's cool, man.
Really, really good era Gibsons. And yeah, I'll never get rid of those guitars. Those are from a dear friend of mine.
Awesome. Are there any players, you talked a lot about Joe Perry, but are there any players who've influenced you that people would be surprised to hear about?
I'm going to say a guy, and people that know me will go like, Phil, what are you talking about? Everybody knows that, but Eddie Van Halen, and I only say that because people that know me know that I played Eddie in a tribute band called the Mighty Dan Halen, did wigs and the whole thing. But I don't normally play anything like him, because if I start doing the stuff, I sound just like Eddie Van Halen. There's no way to get around it.
Right.
I don't even tap because it sounds like Ed. I got so into his head when the band was gigging a lot that I really can't even.
Was that like a Steel Panther kind of a band or?
No, we were Van Halen.
Oh, you were legit.
I mean,
there was no comedy about it.
No, man, we did it. I mean, we had an amazing David Lee Roth, Matt Harris, that could just do the wow, those howl things. You could not tell the difference. It was incredible. But no, we were really damn good. But I can't do that stuff in my own playing. That sounded just like Ed.
No, so I get that. I totally
everybody know. Everybody else, all my other influences, honestly, Craig, I wear on my sleeve. And you can totally tell I like Billy Gibbons. Hmm. You can totally tell I like Robin Trower. You can totally tell I like Michael Schenker. Yeah. You know, all those kind of guys. There's,
man, yeah, you talk about Schenker. He's got one of the best albums ever, the UFO double live. It's like Lights Out, it's called, or something like that.
Strangers in the Night.
Strangers in the Night. Oh, I have the album of that, like the proper two disc set. That's another one I burned holes. You know, I wore that out, man. What a great, you know, how many, you know, that, what's the song is Lights Out, the last song, right?
The Lights Out is Shoot, I think, on that. Well, you know what? There's two different orders. It's the iTunes has a different order.
I'm gonna get this right now.
Then the album, because I think the album they couldn't fit the regular show order on because of space, so they had to rearrange. And I don't know
Rock Bottom.
Yeah,
that's the song I was thinking of.
I was gonna say Eddie Trunk could tell us what the difference is right now. He's the biggest UFO fan in the world.
Yeah.
Hey Eddie. But they had to change it up because of album space.
That song right there, that Rock Bottom, that's, you know,
and we just shared the bill with him in Japan
with Michael Schenker.
With Schenker,
how was that?
We played a festival in Tokyo, then the next night in Osaka we had an off night and they played, and so we had met him, so we got to go to the show that night again. Absolutely ridiculous. He is playing his ass off right now, and what he's doing is called the Michael Schenker Fest. He has Gary Barden, Macaulay.
Gary Barden from what do I know that name?
The singer. He has three singers from
UFO.
The Schenker band.
Okay.
So he has his three main singers from Michael Schenker group out on the road with him. That's wild. He also has Chris Glenn and Ted McKenna on bass and drums in the band. Wow. So it's like, it's the MSG.
That is so cool.
And they are touring the States in the spring.
Really?
So it is, the show is incredible. Michael is absolutely playing flawless.
Awesome. That's really good to hear. He's a guy that, you know, I've read stories. I don't know. I've never spoke to the guy or anything, but he's a tremendous guitar player who deserves everything he gets, you know?
Oh man, he's fantastic.
Most people, top performers, they're always trying to grow as a player, as I'm sure you are. And I was curious, how has your playing changed maybe over the last 5 years in line with that growth?
I've decided to give up the speed chase. I just can't play fast. My right hand will not speed fast pick. I cannot sweep. I've given it up. So now I'm just trying to play, I guess, as cool as I can, which means I'm trying to copy Billy Gibbons all the time, because there's nobody cooler than him playing wise. Yeah, I just realized that I can't do it. And I was putting a lot of like thought, like, oh, it's really holding me back, what I really want to do. Then I realized that none of my favorite players do that kind of thing. Not knocking it at all. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not knocking it, because guys like Paul Gilbert and Joe Satriani that can really do that well are mind-blowing to watch. And guys that can do it as well as them and make it not sound forced and also play all the right notes in there, because a lot of guys will throw in one of those licks. It's like, oh, nice harmonic minor eight-finger tapping lick over a major progression. Like, you know, half the notes are wrong, and the guy will obviously throw it in there just to do it.
Right.
It's like, oh, you had me. It was a pretty decent solo until you showed off. So, but there's guys that can do that so well. Two guys in Nashville now come to mind. They're a new band called Denman, and the brothers are Ben and Dakota, and they're both guitar players. And those guys do all that stuff, and they do harmonies.
With each other.
It's absolutely amazing. They're so good at it. And – when you can do it that well and make it fit in the music and make it sound good, it's definitely in you. It isn't in me to play like that. And I've realized it. It's like, no, just, you know, Jerry Garcia did a cool exercise one time where he, in guitar solos for a while, he would only play either half notes or whole notes. I forget what he did. That's now, I'm not going that, I'm not going to go that far, but for, that's a pretty good exercise just to slow down. And if you're going to pick a note, you better pick the right one.
That's pretty clever. I never heard that. That's a really clever exercise.
Yeah. So I've just decided to slow down and just be as play as cool as possible.
Dude, so it says you. It sounds like you've been like over the last X number of years of your life being getting extremely real with you and being really okay with it, which is awesome. Please, and don't mistake me sounding like, you know, I'm on a pulpit. I'm just like talking buddy to buddy. Because I certainly don't have my shit together. I don't want to make it sound like I do.
Neither do I. But you know, it's a constant journey. It's a constant learning process.
Yeah.
You know, you're always learning new things and trying new things. Well, that doesn't work. Well, that's okay. No harm done.
Right.
Or hopefully no harm done.
Yeah.
And I'll try it this way, you know?
Yeah, but that's really cool. I have a lot of respect for you for that because it seems like I really try to observe and listen and watch people really carefully. And it seems like it's a difficult thing for a lot of people to sort of be honest with themselves about stuff, especially and who wants to be honest with themselves, myself included, about something they don't want to hear.
That's
not easy. That's
where the learning comes from.
Right.
is when you find those things and you work through them.
Right.
And that's when you really learn about yourself and learn about what a hard worker you can be and like what kind of the determination you have is when you get through with that, when you shatter some of these thoughts in your head, because you know you are the only one holding you back.
100%.
I'm the only one holding me back.
Yeah.
Anybody, there's nobody that can hold you back except yourself.
Yes.
And when you start realizing that and shattering some of these thoughts and thought patterns and behavior patterns, that's when you're really going to start to kick ass and do some really, really good things in your life.
Yeah, and as I've gotten older, like for me, liking myself has become more of a priority because I find when I, not being in love with myself, but you know, just acceptance,
sure,
it lowers the stress level in my life.
That was why I quit drinking.
You know, yeah.
When I did quit drinking, that was why I was like, I don't like this person.
Yeah,
one bit,
hmm.
And so I started trying to strive to be a person that I would kind of want to be around.
Yeah, yeah. I could totally relate to that. I've done that not with
I gotta be around myself all the time.
Yeah.
We better get along.
You better get along. Yeah. No, I mean, I totally get it. I've had to do that with other behaviors, not drinking, but so I totally get that. And it's like, you know, you just gotta like you gotta step up for yourself is what
absolutely.
Yeah, in a weird way. Yeah.
Yep.
If I had to ask you to pick your top three Desert Island discs in no particular order and knowing that they could change tomorrow, what would you pick today?
Okay. I'd go Aerosmith Rocks.
Yeah, you got to go that one.
Back to Aerosmith because that's one of those you'll listen to a million times and hear a million new things. Abbey Road.
Hmm.
I'm a Beatles fanatic. Beatles and Kiss are my two favorite bands by far. All right, so I'm on a desert island by myself, probably going to get lonesome and depressed. James Brown, Greatest Hits, because whenever you put on James Brown, you're going to feel pretty good about yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
And dance around, and it's going to improve the mood. So
you know,
James Brown, Greatest Hits, be the last one.
Abbey Road is the number one answer I get for that question.
I'm sure it is, and probably even more than Pepper. Yeah.
But Abbey Road, well, I mean, if you think about it, is there very many album sides better than side two of Abbey Road? I mean,
no,
it's like that you could listen. It's perfect. I mean, you can listen to it in any mood and you're just like, wow, that's fucking amazing. You know, just all the shit going on there.
And then you got, you know, side one, you got, as far as rock and roll, you got Come Together and She's So Heavy.
Yeah. Good stuff.
She's So Heavy is one of the coolest rock songs ever written.
Yeah.
With like five words.
You talk about a riff that, you know, leads into that chorus. It's like so simple and so powerful, man. That's like heavy duty shit.
And then at the end, you've got the arpeggio, the weird D minor shape arpeggio, and then you've got the complete Black Sabbath riff. Doom, boom, 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 boom. Amazing.
Very true, man. Hey, what's something that you've learned? This is good for this conversation in particular. What's something you've learned about yourself along this journey you've been on?
I guess I'm probably always open-minded. That's going back to one of the things I didn't mention earlier, but one of the things about one of the eye-opening things about Nashville is how open-minded everybody was. And I wasn't before. I was kind of a music, whatever. Kind of a little bit of a snob. Not bad, though, but a little bit of one. But that went away very quickly. I started being very open-minded with gigs and being able to adapt into certain situations with personally adapt. And also make my playing adapt, because I kind of think I am a one-trick pony, but I can make the trick work in a lot of different situations. And so I kind of learned that I was flexible and very just kind of like could fit into a lot of different situations and be totally fine and normal and at ease.
That's great.
And confident.
That's great. Yeah, that's important. It's funny how life it's amazing how like life puts you in situations where it's like, here's your chance to be a better person and learn. But it never feels like that. It always feels like, fuck, what do I do now? This sucks.
Yeah, I know. Totally.
But it's like, you know, so I don't know. That's another thing. Like, as I've gotten older, I'm like, okay, what's the opportunity here? I don't know it, but I just got to bear, you know, not stressing out as much when shit happens. I'm like, okay, somewhere here there's an opportunity. I just don't know it today, this minute, you know?
Yeah, it's like, well, here's a lesson. I'm either going to not learn it or I'm going to learn it.
Right, and it's much easier to learn it.
Just get it over with.
Yeah, right. That's the funny thing. It's funny. I had a client many years ago. He was a guy who got sober. Oh, man, this is in the 90s when I was a financial planner. Early 90s.
Oh wow! I should talk to you. I need help.
And he was a guy who got sober, and he said, "Craig, there's this little dirty four-letter word that fixes everything." And I said, "What is it, John?" He goes, "Time." And it was
And
it was so fucking true, like to the point where now if something's going down, I'm like, man, I need the clock to be 6 months ahead. And then sometimes 6 months isn't enough. You're there. You're like, fuck, I was supposed to be, this is supposed to be done by now. What the fuck? You know? So, you know, yeah. And then I had another buddy who was just getting sober, and I was talking to his sponsor. And he said, you know, he's going to get sober, just not on the time frame that you would want him to get sober in. Okay. I get that. So like those, I've learned a lot from talking to guys who've gone through the program, because there's a lot of wisdom in there that, you know, you don't have to be, it's just smart stuff. You don't have to be like recovering from anything outside of life in general, you know?
Yeah. It's helpful. And I know a lot of folks who have gone that, and I definitely have thought about going through that myself. For whatever reason, when I did do that, I didn't feel the need to, and I was just kind of wanting to do it myself. But yeah, I know plenty of people who have done it, and it's saved their lives.
Yeah.
You know, very, very, to put it bluntly, it's, you know, they wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that.
Oh, totally. Hey, tell me something about yourself people would either be surprised to hear or would find a little odd.
I don't know. I'm kind of I don't know. I'm sure that a lot of folks say this, but I'm really actually kind of a nerd. I've really, you know, of course, all the Star Wars and that stuff going on is pretty freaking awesome going on right now. The movie's really good. I liked it a lot. Spoiler alert, there are lightsabers used. So anyway, but no, I guess that might really be might be it. Yeah, I'm a huge I actually went to the. Did you watch a show called Mystery Science Theater 3000?
No, I'm not a sci-fi guy.
It was a show where they watched really bad movies, and this guy and two robots. You could see their silhouettes. They sat in front of the screen and made fun of it the whole time. So that's like one of my favorite shows. So yeah, I guess that would be probably it. Everything else, I'm pretty normal, I guess.
Happiest moment or time in your life?
Man, this is going to sound totally cliche, but probably right now.
No, it sounds good.
You know, everything is going well professionally. I've got, you know, really good relationships with my friends, and I'm in good health, and everything's really kind of, I'm looking forward to next year. Everything seems to be going great for next year with gene shows and personally. So yeah, man, I probably just right now.
Awesome.
I'm having a great time.
Do you have a non-musical superpower?
Non-musical superpower. Not that I'm a superpower musically at all. But I'm trying to think if there's something else that I do that well. I don't really think there's anything else I do quite as well. It's a good thing it's my job. I'm pretty flexible. I enjoy hot yoga.
Hot yoga, and he's flexible. Ladies, pay attention. what's your biggest business or personal win?
Biggest business personal win. Oh, these are great questions, man. Personal win is probably, I would say, you know, I don't know, when you finally realize that this is sounding like a motivational speech. I don't mean it to, but
no, it's cool.
It kind of is. But you know, when you realize that anything in your life that you don't like, that you can get rid of, you can take it out because you put it there. It's kind of like, okay, well, it's my fault. I can fix it. Right. Yeah. That is a business win. I guess maybe just getting my first gig in Nashville, because that's what kind of started everything. And moving to Nashville was it, because before, none of this would have happened for me if I hadn't have moved here. This city has been amazing, and I'm proud to call it home.
That's
and
awesome.
Don't plan on leaving anytime soon.
Yeah, that's cool. But you did it, which is also cool, you know? Like,
yeah, you have to take the leap of faith. You have to just kind of go, okay, I'm doing this, and you know, this can only improve things, because I had nothing going on for me before. I wasn't doing anything I really wanted to do and knew that I could do. So you just have to have that. You gotta do one of these in the blindfold and just step off the cliff.
Not while you're driving, though.
Exactly.
Hey, you have any hobbies or interests outside of music?
Yoga is one. Yoga and cycling when the weather's better. I like that. I'm like, when I'm off the road, I'm pretty much a homebody. I don't watch a lot of TV. I just like kind of like being home and relaxing. But yeah, I guess probably just doing that. And you know, honestly, one of my hobbies has become doing my other projects.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because I've always got kind of something going on, so there's not a whole lot of free time going on there.
Here's
something that people might be surprised to know about me. I drive for Uber and Lyft as well.
Oh, so you're a total hustler, man.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Kind of surprising. So if you come to Nashville, I might pick you up at the airport.
That's really cool, man. last question, man. And you may not be able to answer this. If you can go back in time and do one thing differently, either in business or personal life, what do you think that one thing would be, if at all?
I'll give you my real answer, then I'll answer the question. I'll answer the question. For nothing, because I'm one of those guys that feels if he would have taken a left on Thursday in 1998, that I might not be where I am today. Uh-huh. I think every single decision that you make has an impact. So nothing, but all that being said, I wish I would have been more open-minded and open to the guitar player for hire thing a little earlier. Not that I missed out on anything at all, but in college, you know, I had gotten asked by a couple groups, like, just, you know, just, of course, like I said, I didn't miss out on anything, but, you know, I could have just made some extra money in college, and I probably could have had a better understanding of the music business and just the workings of being a career guitar player a little bit earlier than I did.
Sure.
But I just, yeah, I wasn't there. I wasn't mature enough to do that then. So there you go. But I guess that would be it.
But I'm with you on that. I believe strongly you take a left and your whole life is different.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't lose any sleep over not doing that, because I love where I am. I'm in the exact right place. Where I should be professionally, for sure.
Totally.
So, but I mean, if I had to pick one thing, that would be it.
Well, dude, I can't thank you enough for your time. How can people find you online and send you money and all that? And offline, of course, they could find you in Uber and Lyft. Can people can people request you? Hey, I want Phil Schaus.
I wish they could. Unfortunately, they can't. I gotta be in the area. But I'm on all the socials. I'm V with two E's, Phil Schaus, on Instagram and Twitter. Mm-hmm. I'm on Facebook, Phil Schaus. For guitar lessons, Skype lessons, or like mentoring sessions, whatever you want to call them, email me at philshouseofmusic@gmail.com. And if you want to check out some t-shirts, go to muttmerch.com. And we're also on all the socials as well.
Did you want to have a coupon code or something you mentioned?
Yeah, so listeners, for Everybody Loves Guitar, if you go to Mutt Merch and type in ELG, we'll do a discount for you.
There you go.
So type in when you get to the checkout, it says coupon code, type in ELG, all capital letters, and there'll be a special discount for you. So
there you go.
Thanks for listening. I appreciate it.
Hey, man, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. You're an awesome guy. Thank you for sharing all your cool stories, too.
Man, thank you for having me, Craig. It's been a really good, really fun interview. Thank you.
Well, cool. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. Thanks again to Phil Schaus for spending time with us. Go check him out online at all the socials. Check him out on tour with Gene Simmons. Lessons, philshouseofmusic@gmail.com and muttmerch.com, and enter coupon code ELG, and you'll have a discount. Everybody, go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get notified about future episodes, along with some cool stuff for guitar players. Now, be nice, go play your guitar, and most important, have some fun. Till next time, peace and love. I'm out.
We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.